Y'all ready for the word? Are we there? Okay, good. Exodus 1:22, Bible app, Bible. I'm just going to use this as our one thematic verse for the day. I'm going to go over some others right here in this passage, but I'm just going to read Exodus 1:22 and then just take off. Exodus 1:22 says this: Then Pharaoh commanded all his people, saying, "Every son who is born, you are to cast into the Nile, and every daughter you are to keep alive." Then Pharaoh commanded all his people, saying, "Every son who is born, you are to cast into the Nile, every daughter you are to keep alive." Today I want to talk to you from the topic surviving Pharaoh. Surviving Pharaoh. It starts off simple. Pharaoh puts an edict out in the land. An edict is an official order by someone in power. Basically, he's saying, this is what we finna do. He's letting everybody know this is the direction that we're going. And Pharaoh, what he says here is he says, every son, I want you to kill him. Every woman, keep them alive. I need all the men and the women in here to understand a simple observation in this verse. That while the enemy is after everyone, he has a specific hit on men. He has a specific hit on men because he understands covenantal order. He understands what God is trying to do in history. And so while he's after everyone, he has a hit out on men. So if you ever ask, ladies, why is it hard to find a good man? If you've asked that question, you're thinking too humanistically. Because you got to understand that Pharaoh was after him. If what you see is all you see, you do not see all there is to be seen. Because Pharaoh was coming. And so he says, I want you to kill them because that represents strength and power. I'm not interested in godly fathers. I'm not interested in godly husbands. I'm not interested in men who are known in the gates. I'm not interested in men who love God in City Hall, who sit behind the judge's chair. I'm not interested in those types of men, because if you have those types of men in society, the enemy has a problem. And so he says, we gotta do something to terminate that. So he wants to take what has been conceived in you that you have given birth to and kill it. That's what he wants to do, because the enemy here is interested in the replication of his kingdom. He's not interested in the replication of God's kingdom. That's not what he wants to do. He's insecure. Did you know the devil's insecure? He's insecure, so here he comes up with an edict and a plan to take out society by starting with the head, by taking out the men. He says, I want to do this in Exodus 1:10 simply because, come, let us deal wisely with them, he says, or else they will multiply, and in the event of war, they will come up against us. You see, he's thinking about a military problem. And in the event of war, we got to take them out, because I don't want them to come up against us, because I'm interested in the multiplication of the advancement of my kingdom, not God's. And so I need to change things. You need to understand that the enemy is he's an imitator of God. God from the beginning said, let us make man in our image according to our likeness and let them rule and be fruitful and multiply. He told Noah the same thing after the ark docked. He said, be fruitful and multiply. In Matthew 28, he said, go ye therefore and make disciples. That is the same. Be fruitful and multiply. Have replications of who I am all over the earth. And the enemy wants to do the same thing. Be fruitful and multiply so that I can advance my kingdom against his kingdom. And he will employ you to help him do it. So if you're a believer in the room and you feel negative about the fact that people can do evil things and be successful, don't get confused, because God is not the only one who blesses. Even when you see lukewarm Christians, the enemy will use Christians too. Wasn't it not the enemy who tried to bless Jesus in the wilderness? He said, if you bow down and worship me, I will give you the kingdoms of this world. So he's trying to get Jesus to be on his team. Trust me when I tell you, he'll definitely try to get you to be on his team. And so here, he's trying to figure out a way to suppress the people of God from multiplying. So his first plan, you find it in Exodus 1:11. His first plan, he says, so they appointed taskmasters over them to afflict them with hard labor. So he wanted to make things hard on them. That was his first goal. His first goal was to say, let me just make life hard on them, because if I can make life hard on them, then they'll become doubters, they'll lose faith, they'll become people who are walking away from what brought them where they came from. They will start taking a step back from their calling if I can just make life hard on them. I missed to say when Jerry was up here talking, and he was talking about the church and all of the things that are going on, the enemy, bro, is trying to make life hard on you because he wants you to give up and quit. He doesn't want the multiplication. He's not interested in this thing advancing. He's not interested in seeing God's people being discipled to advance God's kingdom. So he's going to try to make this thing as hard as possible. And as soon as he made it hard, it says, verse 12, but the more they afflicted them, the more they multiplied. So sometimes you got to understand that God will allow you to live in a season of affliction, because he also knows that affliction is one of the main ingredients of multiplication. See, the saints of Jesus Christ tend to come together when they're afflicted. The saints tend to get in their word when they're afflicted. They tend to pray more when they're afflicted. So God even used the enemy to afflict the people so that he can get more multiplication in his own kingdom. So I need you to understand, when he's talking about the middle, God will allow you to sit in that space because he knows that space is the space where you'll be the most dependent. The Christian life, ladies and gentlemen, is not about your independence. That's the human life. As you grow up from child to adult, you're trying to become more independent and get out of your parents' house and take care of yourself. But the Christian life is about becoming more dependent. It's the opposite. The more you mature in Christ is the more you depend on him. If you're immature, you try to live life outside of him or away from him. And so we got to get it right that God will allow these afflictions, and he allowed Pharaoh to afflict the people, and it says they multiplied even the more. Well, here he's got to come up with a new plan because his plan didn't work. And then in verse 15, he comes up with a new plan, and this is his plan. He says, then the king of Egypt spoke to the Hebrew midwives, one of whom was named Shiphrah and the other was named Puah. And he said, when you are helping the Hebrew women to give birth and see them upon the birth stool, if it is a son, then you shall put him to death. But if it is a daughter, then you shall let him live. Okay. Hebrew midwives, I need you to use your experience. I need you to use your vocation. I need you to use your talent, your abilities, to go kill the Hebrew boys. Okay, y'all didn't get that. Okay. Jerry, let me say it in a more modern way. The enemy is so crafty that he'll go get God's women and tell them to go kill God's men. Because he knows you have the power to do it. From the beginning, he skips Adam and goes to Eve. Delilah just cut his hair. Herodias, tell your daughter to go get the head of John the Baptist. Jezebel, kill the prophets. He knows that the women have the power to kill men. And so he'll use God's women to go kill God's men. That's why Proverbs 14:1 says, a wise woman builds her house, but a foolish one tears it down with her bare hands. And there's a lot of powerful women in the Bible who used their power the right way, and it came to salvation. Rahab saved her family while the walls were crumbling down. Ruth didn't go back to her comfort zone or her past to operate, but went with Naomi and found a man named Boaz, gave birth to a son named Obed. Obed gave birth to a son named Jesse. Jesse gave birth to a son named David. David in the lineage of Jesus Christ. Why? Because she would not let, Ruth would not let her past dictate her future. And so a generation of men came who were saved, bringing about a genealogy to Jesus Christ. It doesn't even stop there. You have Priscilla that with her husband Aquila properly taught Apollos the gospel to make sure that he taught it correctly so that the kingdom of God can proliferate and live. Was it not Paul who sent Phoebe to make sure that the church could continue to expand the right way? And he said, listen to her. These are women who built the house, and they would not let it be torn down. What am I telling you? I'm telling you that if you've ever heard the ministry of Jerry Flowers, you really have the fingerprint of Tanisha all over you. If you've ever heard the ministry of Jonathan Evans, it's because you have Kanika's fingerprint all over you. If you've ever heard the ministry of Dr. Tony Evans, it's because you have the fingerprint of Lois all over you. These are women that when the enemy came in, they said, absolutely not. So just be aware. The power that it says that's here, because the enemy is whispering in your ear. And he wants to use your past. He wants to use your hurt. He wants to use what homeboy did to you yesterday for you to take it out on the future one tomorrow. And you need to know, ladies, since I'm talking to y'all for a second, the men over there are like, I like this. This is... that men don't come to earth on storks. This ain't Dumbo. They come out of your wombs. And when it happens, you need to know Pharaoh's coming. So, practically, if you're a woman in here, God just gave me this, so I'm just going, it may sting a little bit. And you have a baby from a man who married somebody else. He moved on and you ain't moved on. So you're scorned about it. I understand. But if he is a willing father, not unwilling, if he is a willing father and you do not let him father that child, because Pharaoh's trying to write big checks to Shifra and Pua, to take men out of the equation, and he's whispering in the woman's ear, you don't remember what he did to you? He doesn't deserve it, does he? And he's trying to get in and be a father to the child. It's going to be emotionally lucrative to leave him out, but your heritage will be in debt. Because he's trying to get God's women to kill off God's men. You don't want him to be the dad. Satan doesn't either. He agrees with you. Everybody's preaching sermons on Moses. But there would be no Moses without Shifra and Pua. two ladies' names that you've probably, I ain't never heard read them names. It's not about their names, it's about their faith. And so what happens is he says in verse 21, as an encouragement, he says, because the midwives feared God, he established households for them. They looked at Pharaoh, and these are the lead midwives, because two ladies ain't helping everybody give birth, okay? These are the lead midwives who have midwives under them, so they had to make a decision on whether they were going to Titus II other women to do what Pharaoh says to do, or they were going to Titus II other women to fear God like they fear God. And so they took this position of leadership, and they told Pharaoh, say, bro, we ain't going to be able to do that. Why would we go kill our own men? That's not a good idea. And so because they were unwilling to do it, even when the pressure came in, God established their heritage. And here we are in a passage where the edict comes, because since God's people wouldn't do it, then he went back to his minions. So back in Exodus 1:22, where we started, he says, then Pharaoh commanded all his people. He had to go back to a different game plan. He went back to his own minions to try to figure out how we're going to get this done. And what he wants to do is he wants to kill the thing that God has conceived in you, that you have given birth to, that you want to see develop and grow. Now, this is for everybody in the room. Everybody in the room has something that has been conceived in them that you have given birth to, and you desperately want to see it grow. You want to see it develop. You want to see it mature. You want to see it nurse its way to full maturity. You want to see your passion grow. You want to see your business grow. You want to see your marriage grow. You want to see your relationship grow. You want to see your family grow. You want to see your child grow. There are things that give you life that you want to see grow, and Pharaoh's coming after all of it. Why? Because if I can let them live but take the thing that gives them life, I can make them my slave. It's called your reason for living, your reason for being. Now I'm doubting. Now I'm depressed. Now I'm down and out on God. I ain't trying to go to church. Now I don't trust. Now I'm losing faith. Now I'm out of there. Perfect. Got one. Let's go to the next one. He'll let you live. He just wants you to live for him. So he'll try to crush your dreams and crush your purpose and crush your calling. Crush your family and crush your marriage. You thought y'all just get on each other's nerves. And you do. Pharaoh is lurking. Ephesians 6 says, we do not fight against flesh and blood, but against the rulers, the principalities, the war forces of darkness, the spiritual forces of wickedness in heavenly places. It's beyond what your eyes can see. Everything visible and physical is preceded by something invisible and spiritual. And if you don't get that or see that, it'll mess your whole life up, because you'll be living life with only a humanistic perspective on why things are happening. And Pharaoh sees that it was conceived. He sees that you've delivered it. He sees how strong it is. He sees the growth, and he wants to kill it, whatever it is, because he needs you to be so down and out that you will just continue to build his stuff. And here, in Exodus 2:2, you have a lady who finds herself pregnant. It says, the woman conceived and bore a son. Uh-oh. And when she saw that he was beautiful, she hid him for 3 months. Okay, now, in a lot of times we read the Bible and we don't really put ourselves in the person's position. I give birth, and it's a son. Yay! And I'm trying to figure out a way to keep the baby from getting stripped from me. I'm trying to figure out a way because she saw that it was beautiful. The word beautiful there means healthy. This is a healthy relationship, marriage, business. These things that have just given birth to is so healthy. I just want to see it grow, so I'm going to do the best I can to hold on to it and keep it from danger so that it can grow and develop. Are you with me? And so that's, everybody in this room has something that they're passionate about that they want to see grow and develop. And you've just delivered it. It has just come. And you want to see it nursed to maturity. And here she is trying to make sure that Pharaoh doesn't get him. Anybody got kids, y'all? Okay. This hard. 3 months keeping the baby from Pharaoh? Shh. Shh. No. You got to understand that she's losing her mind. For 3 months trying to keep the baby quiet and not heard by some of the taskmasters and the Egyptians who were walking around looking and listening to see if boys are being born. The enemy is lurking, and you're wondering why it's so hard to keep that thing in your hands, because Pharaoh's hands are stronger than yours. His tug. Why is the marriage so hard? Pharaoh's coming. Why is this so much of a struggle to hold on to? Why are we struggling to find a building? And you're trying to figure out, how do I hold on to this thing? Anybody ever feel like that? And so here we go. I'm going to make one point, basically. And this point is going to save your whole life. So you got to listen up. It's so simple and so hard. 3 months. I'm just doing the best I can to hold on. Verse 3. But when she could no longer hide him, she got him a wicker basket and covered it over with tar and pitch, and then she put the child into it and set it among the reeds by the bank of the Nile. Don't read that and think to yourself, oh, let me just keep reading. A mother took her child, put it in a basket, and put it in the Nile with the crocodiles. Has she lost her mind? When she could no longer hide him means when you're so stressed out trying to hold on to this thing with your own hands. I'm losing my mind trying to figure out how to get all of this done. This is breaking. That is breaking. I can't hold on to it anymore. Has anybody ever gotten to the place where you're like, I can't do it anymore? I've been trying for years. I've been trying for months. I've been trying for weeks. But my hands are burning because Pharaoh's on the other side of the rope and his pull is too strong. And I can no longer hold this thing anymore. This lady took the child, put him in a basket, and put him in the Nile. Have you ever had a blessing start turning into a burden? That's how you know that things are starting to slip and Pharaoh is doing a pretty good job of coming after your stuff, because you were excited about it and now it's burdening you. And so she takes the baby, puts the baby in a basket, and puts it in the Nile. I got to get a little bit closer. Let me come around. You need to know that your survival is not going to be dependent upon what you're able to hold on to. Your survival is going to be dependent upon what you're willing to let go of. If she holds on to that baby, she knows one outcome is guaranteed. And if you try to play God, one outcome is guaranteed. Your hands are not strong enough. You will lose your grip and it will slip away. You will lose your mind. One of the ways you know, the reason why you're losing your mind trying to hold on to what you have just delivered, the reason why it's slipping away, and reason why you're racking your mind trying to figure out how to work this thing out, is because by you using your own intellect, your own ability, your own strength to try to hold on to this thing, you have just stepped into God territory. And in God territory, you don't have the power to be there. So you lose your mind trying to be God because you ain't him. And because you don't have the power to make this thing work, make this thing better, you thought that your intellect would change that person through one conversation, didn't you? You thought you could sit down with them and share your experiences and how you think and the things that you came through, and you thought that your encouragement was going to get the job done only for them to remain crazy. And now you losing your mind. Didn't I just say to you? Didn't I just make this come through for you? Didn't I just help you? Yeah, you did. You need to go sit down somewhere. Your pride has a hold of you, doesn't it? And you're not surviving very well. Your hands are weak. And here, Moses' mother, she makes a hard decision, because when you love something so much, it's hard to let it go. I was reading Chuck Swindoll's book, and it said, for the purposes of grace, you must let them go. Meaning, you're preventing somebody else from experiencing the grace of God in their life because you're trying to be the God for their life. That it's better if you let them go. Now, let me teach you how to let them go. Okay, I want to make sure we understand. I can't fall. I'm 42. Once you get above 40, like, I'm careful. I'm like, I'm not trying to pull nothing on the stage. 40 does something. I sneezed and cracked my ribs. She put the baby in the hands of God. God, you have to do it. I can no longer lose my mind. I can no longer be a crazy person. I don't even recognize myself anymore, trying to hold on to this situation. So you come to the realization your hands are too weak, and you give it to God. I can't. Now, my theologians in the room are talking about, Joker, how you know she gave it to God? She put it in a basket and put it in the Nile. How does that mean that she gave it to God? I'm glad you asked. But when she could no longer hide him, she put him in a wicker basket and covered it with tar and pitch. Ooh. Wicker basket is translated ark. So let me take you back to Genesis 6:14. Noah, make yourself an ark of gopher wood. You shall make the ark with rooms, and shall seal it inside and out with pitch. The ark was used for the salvation of Noah's family. It was God's thing that he had Noah build so that there could be judgment that comes, but a family could be saved. Right now, there's an edict out on the land, and people are getting slaughtered and thrown into the Nile. But what she does is she says, Jesus, you have to take my son, and I'm going to make sure that I put it in your hands. because I need salvation. I need you to come through. I'm going to my prayer closet. I've got to do this differently than what I tried to do at the verse before. So I'm going to put the baby in an ark. Jesus Christ is the ark of our salvation. That means you give that thing to the ark. He said, those who come through my doors, John 10:9, will be saved. And so some of us, not only us, need to bring ourselves to Jesus, but we need to bring our circumstances to Jesus. Because I understood the translation and looking it up of wicker basket, I knew her intent was not to kill it. I knew her intent was to save him. With a total dependence on God. But you got to understand, it says, then she sealed the wicker basket with tar and pitch. I went back to Genesis 6:14. Noah did the same thing. He sealed the ark with pitch. So then I had to go look up the word pitch. The word pitch in the Hebrew is kafar or kafer. The root word of the Hebrew word means atonement. Bruh. I'm reconciling with God for the forgiveness of sins. So this lady is saying, Lord, forgive me of my sins. I want to be close to you. I want to reconcile with you, and I want you to save what you've delivered. I'm giving my whole self to you. She sealed it with pitch. That means no judgment can come through. That's why, that's like a caulking. Y'all know what caulking is? When you seal something, you're trying not to let the water come through. When Noah sealed the ark, it was for the purposes of the waters of judgment not to be able to come through on those who came onto the ark. So they had eternal security. It was secure on the ark because it was sealed with pitch. That's why Ephesians 1:13 says, those who believe in Christ are sealed by the Spirit. Okay? Romans 8:1, there is therefore no condemnation to those who are in Christ Jesus. Because once you give your life, your situation, your circumstances, your family over to Jesus, you know it's sealed. I'm good. This does not mean, ladies and gentlemen, that it felt good for her to let go. It's not going to feel good. It's going to be one of the hardest things you do with something that's so important in your life. But feelings do not have intellect. They don't think, they just feel. And God is calling you this morning to say, whether it's the church, your family, whether it's your relationship, your finances, your bill, whatever you're struggling with, he's saying, give it to me. And then she placed the baby in the Nile. So what I'm not telling you to do is go to the Nile without the wicker basket. See, I got to make sure they understand, because some people in here, well, he said let go, and they take their marriage like a football and punt it. He said let you go. No, I didn't. I said you put it in the hands of God. And when she did that in the Nile, where everybody else was dying, that's where her son would be surviving. In the hands of God, drowning became deliverance. In the hands of God, disaster became destiny. Because he was able to turn that thing around. Psalm 55:22 says, cast your cares upon the Lord, and he will sustain you. Matthew 11:28, come to me, all ye who are weary and heavy laden, and I will give you. Okay. Proverbs 3, 5, and 6, trust in the Lord with do not lean on your, but in all your ways acknowledge, and who makes your path straight? Oh, you don't? You don't do it? You would have think by how we live, we make our path straight. But if he's making your path straight, that's an indictment on your path. That means it's crooked. If he sustains you, that means you don't. If he gives you rest, that means you don't. See, through the scriptures, God is trying to take responsibility, but he won't take responsibility from people who think they're their own God. So he'll let you keep it. So, places the baby in the Nile. His sister, verse 4, stood at a distance to find out what would happen to him. This is Miriam, Moses' sister. So his sister like this. Oh, this is a mess. But I thought about Moses' mother having to do it with her child watching. But what the child was watching was the faith of a parent. And her having the ability to watch that faith. Don't you know people are watching you when you give things to God? And they're wondering what would happen to it. What is going to happen to their situation, their marriage, their business, their whatever? What is going to happen to it now that they've given it to the Lord? And Miriam is standing by wondering what's going to happen. And in verse 5, it says, the daughter of Pharaoh came down to bathe in the Nile. Oh, that's luck. That's chance. Pharaoh's daughter, at the time that Moses' mother put him in the Nile, just decided that's the moment she stinks and that she gonna go take a bath, because now she wants to take a bath. And she, her daughter came down in verse 5. With her maidens walking along the Nile, taking a walk, and she saw the basket from among the reeds and sent her maid and said, bring it over here. When she opened it, she saw the child, and behold, the boy was crying, and she had pity on him and said, this is one of the Hebrew children. Oh, you know, so it's just chance that when she put the baby down, God came and picked the baby up. A lot of us think we're waiting on God, and God is saying, no, I'm waiting on you, and I have more time than you. You're going to run out first, trust me. I'm waiting for you to put it down. But until you put it down, my sovereignty will not pick it up. If it's in your hands, it will not be in my hands. We are not serving together on this one. This is all me. He's waiting for you to move. In our church, we install motion detector lighting. The reason why we install motion detector lighting is because, well, people who don't pay bills don't turn off lights. So we had to figure out a way to save on our electric bill. This was when I was in high school. It's been around a long time. They did a presentation for us, and they basically said, the power is installed, when you come into the room, the power experiences the movement on the ground, and then once it experiences the movement on the ground, then it activates the power that's in the air. So if the power is not coming on, it's because there's no movement, not because there's no power. So many people in the church think God is an ethereal spirit that lives out in Never Never Land, that never operates in my here and now. And God is saying, when you move, I'll move, and it'll be just like that. Some of y'all are like, yeah, I used to be in the world. I know what song you're referring to. I know what song you're referring to. And so God is watching. With all the power, your hands are not as strong as Pharaoh's hands, but God's hands are much stronger than Pharaoh's hands. He doesn't even need to use two of them. The Bible calls it the mighty right hand of God. And Pharaoh's daughter comes and picks the baby up, and she's all nice. She has pity on the child and wants to help out. But because Miriam was watching what happened, You got to be kidding me. Pharaoh's daughter picked up the baby. This faith thing works. Well, now I want to be a part of it. I want to do it too. I want to join in on this God stuff. So Miriam comes up with a plan. Verse 7, then his sister said to Pharaoh's daughter, shall I go and call a nurse for you from among the Hebrew women that she may nurse the child for you? This little girl said, oh, this is going to be fun. Hey, I got an idea, Pharaoh's daughter. You can't nurse the baby. You have pity on the baby. We all love the baby. So I know a Hebrew woman that can nurse the baby for you. Watch this response. Pharaoh's daughter, verse 8, said to her, go ahead. So the girl went and called the child's mother. Pharaoh's daughter said, I wish I would have thought of that. That's a great idea. Little did Pharaoh's daughter know that Miriam was going to get her mom, who had just put the baby down. A boomerang doesn't come back until you throw it. If it's in your hands, it's just in your hands. But God can make things come back around to those who are willing to have faith. I wish that was the end of the story, but it's not. It gets better. It ends like this. Verse 9. Then Pharaoh's daughter said to her, take this child away and nurse him for me, and I will give you wages. This lady got paid to nurse her own baby. Don't you know that God is able to do exceedingly, abundantly, beyond all that you can ask or think, according to the power that works in you? God wants to take it to a whole nother level. He's just waiting for you to let it go. God is trying to take your situation higher. He's just waiting for you to let go of control. God is going to do something that you can't even imagine in your mind. But you're going to be able to tell the story later. She's nursing her own son, the thing that was conceived in her, that she delivered, that she wanted to see grow and develop, that she had to make the hard decision to put him in the wicker basket, to place him in the Nile. God picked it up and paid her wages. And the good part about it is that's Pharaoh's daughter who's paying her. That means the enemy is writing checks against his own plan. You need to always remember that the devil is the devil, but he's God's devil. And God will have the devil writing checks against his own schemes. When he can get his people to give it to him. I don't know if you've ever heard this phrase from your grandmama or not, but what I'm trying to tell you is, baby, you need to let go and let go.